Okay, we will bring House Judiciary Committee to order, and the time is 1:14 p.m. The date is Friday, March 24th. We have members present, Representative Gruenberg, Cott, myself, Chairman Anderson, Representative Wilson, Coghill, and Guerra, Representative McGuire. The chair is in an executive council state governments meeting. She is the vice president of that organization and will be done shortly, but it's a critical meeting for herself and for our legislature, she being the representative for the state. That being said, we have pulled one bill from the agenda. That is House Bill 442, Healthcare Decisions, and that will be brought up next week. Today, we want to wrap up with deliberation on Senate Bill 20, Offenses Against Unborn Children, and then we will hear House Bill 276, Business License Tobacco Endorsement, and then wrap up with House Bill 439, Insurance Product Regulation Compact. I chair the House Labor and Commerce Committee, and I believe there's only one bill on today's agenda, and I think if we go, hopefully we don't go too late, but presuming Representative McGuire's back, or if she does not come back, either way, I think that I can stay a little bit late wrap up these three bills.
On that point, that's my bill with Representative Chenault, where the co-primes and I need to be there for that.
Correct. And so when I depart, you'll know that
I will depart with you.
You can depart with me. So that being said, we, as I recall, we had Senate Bill 20 before us. We had closed public testimony. I think this has been thoroughly debated. I think there has been also some consternation on both sides, the sponsor and members, in terms of the detail and looking. I think we were assiduous in analysis of the bill, and there are some differing philosophies on what the intent of the bill is and the direction we're going therefrom. I think I will keep the debate open a little bit longer. Before we do any further procedural deliberation, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. It's an emotional issue for sure. There's been a little bit of press coverage on the bill, and I think we've done our best to try and reach a compromise on the bill, and I think it's not going to happen. There's not going to be a compromise that we can all agree with. So it's a shame. There's the part of the bill that I think we all agree with, which is that we should increase sentences for people who assault pregnant women, who cause a miscarriage. I think that's a heinous crime, and I agree to the sentences that are in this bill on that. And the amendment that the senator and I had discussed, that we had proposed, and I think the members of this committee, many of the members of this committee would be comfortable with, would be making it a much stiffer penalty if you cause a miscarriage, if you cause an injury to a woman and her baby. But the part of the bill that I think we're never going to agree with is the part that I see having an impact on Roe versus Wade, and that's the unborn child terminology that's used throughout the bill. We could pass the same bill that would say it's illegal to terminate a pregnancy, it's illegal to assault a pregnant woman, it's illegal to attack a pregnant woman, and I could impose the same sentences that everybody on this committee on both sides of the issue would want to impose. But the language that I think will be used by lawyers to reverse Roe versus Wade, I think that's an issue we should fight on some other day. So I am going to do this.
I'm going to cut you off, Representative Guerra, only because if you were going to make a procedural motion, I want to recognize that a work draft has been handed to me about 5 minutes before the meeting from Shalon. I was looking at it. That's why I didn't reference it at the start of the meeting. It's version B, and I don't want to overlook this version. Briefly, if Senator Dyson would like to go through the changes, I think that's out of courtesy. Representative Guerra, we should at least look at what they've been working on. It looks like
Chairman.
Changes.
Just as a point of procedural issue, I think we still have his amendment on the floor for debate. I don't think it actually has been voted on.
Okay, this was Representative Garris. Do you want to withdraw?
I'll withdraw that amendment for right now.
So that amendment, as debated on Wednesday, 2 days ago on the 22nd, is withdrawn from Representative Garris. Representative Coghill, do you want to make the motion that we adopt this for discussion purposes?
Yes, Mr.
With the understanding, we're throwing it with the understanding that it could be raised
of
again.
Of course. So, yeah, obviously.
No, it was.
Representative then, Mr. Chairman, we have a new work draft for CS for Senate Bill number 20, which is dated 3/24/06, and it's the 24 LS 0197/B version.
members to understand on these work drafts, all you have to do is reference the letter. So that's so version B. Thank you. And any objection to
yes,
having
I
that
do.
Before us for discussion purposes?
Mr. Chair, we were working off of a bill, and we adopted amendment number one. Now, what is the difference between version B and the U version and amendment number one? Is the B version just the U version with amendment number one?
And okay, so there's an objection to the adoption. To the point of the objection, there is a clarification. Maybe Senator Dyson can clarify that.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Guerra, for your statesmanlike action. I have not seen the B version. I saw the draft that we submitted that hopefully, and I just got the B, but it should, and it was intended to include the amendment that we made here on the floor.
And that's the only change?
Negative. It is not the only change. It also reinserts what was in our original bill that says a woman cannot be charged for any actions that she took against herself that ended up damaging the child. And then because of the very issues that were raised at this table on Wednesday when the members of the Senate Judiciary had wanted to have some charges available against a woman who recklessly damages her child, we had gone through all of the assault passages in the statutes and made it more difficult to charge a woman. So we inserted the phrase with a dangerous instrument and things like that to make it very unlikely that a woman would be charged unless she took very deliberate actions to hurt her child. So in the B version that you've had, those additional phrases we inserted last year have been withdrawn, and so now the assault and manslaughter things and all those sorts of things are back to what they are for all other crimes in our statutes, as I remember.
Mr. Chair,
I don't think I explained that well, but maybe you get what I'm driving at.
I'm sighing because I recognize you're trying to, Senator Dyson's trying to work a compromise here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's things, and thank you for the analysis, but it's not specific to the bill. I'm worried we could miss something.
All right, I can.
And then Senator Dyson, and then.
I may very well strongly support what you've done. And I'm just, can we just stand at ease for a second, Mr.?
Yeah, we'll take a brief at ease.
I want to look in.
123, Representative Gruenberg has the floor.
Thank you. Senator, could you or the staff or somebody quickly go through and hit every change? And then I'm sure I'll withdraw my objection. It looks like a good job. But I want to know what I'm getting here.
So
and
the
I know
objection
you
made, there's been it's appropriate on the objection to go through line by line where there's been a change made from version B into
version
B from version U.
Yeah.
All right. I might do this clumsily, but have patience. All right. So section 1. You get down to the fourth paragraph. And the phrase, for purposes of this paragraph, a woman's decision to remain in a domestic violence relationship and stuff, those three and a half lines are stricken because now, in a later section, anything a woman does can't be held against her.
Good.
So that's Senator Dyson. That's on page. You're looking at what version?
What he did
no,
was
but
on
what version, Representative Gruenberg?
The U version.
Okay, on the U version.
He had taken out the language after the semicolon, page 2, lines 7 to 10. That's gone.
All right.
And I'm glad.
All right. Then down in section 11.41.160.
That's page 2, line 19 of the U version. Okay.
Yeah. So the recklessly, let's see.
You know what, Senator Dyson? Shalon is passing out, aide to the Judiciary Committee is passing out something that you may want to follow. I mean,
that's exactly what I was using.
Okay, good.
Oh, this is helpful.
Yeah, that really does it quite clearly. But this is what we gave to Ledge Legal.
Mr. Chair, maybe we could go off record for a minute so we can review this, and then it'd be faster than him going through.
I don't think that's appropriate, though. I don't agree. Representative Guerra.
I think I would recommend this. While Representative Groomberg goes through the parts that are concerning him, could we address one other part of this CS?
Yes, we can.
And then we can speed things along.
And keep in mind that this is on the discussion of his objection to even a dot version B of Senate Bill 20.
I think the more I think about this, Senator, I think I thought you were going to change something else that you didn't, but now that I think about it, you never committed to do that. But so another part of, among the parts of the bill that caused me concern are page 2, line 21.
This is the new bill?
Of the B version?
Yes.
One of the things we talked about the other day, and in fairness to you, I'm sure that you didn't commit to change this now that I think about it, and it's still in here, is this provision of criminally negligent homicide of an unborn child. And we had testimony from Ms. Carpinetti that a criminally negligent homicide could be a car accident. So you're driving 85 miles an hour down the road. You don't intend to hurt anybody. You have an accident. Your passenger, your wife, in the passenger seat is pregnant. In your car accident, you've now caused a miscarriage. And under this provision, the husband has now committed a homicide. And that causes me also a huge amount of concern to charge somebody with a homicide for in a circumstance like this, an accidental crime like that. So,
Senator Dyson,
and I appreciate that concern. What you have before you is intentional, and our direction to the original drafter was to draft laws that made reasonably close to the damage you did to an unborn child. It was reasonably equivalent what the penalties would have been if you'd have done it to a child who was postpartum, so that if the child had been sitting beside its mother in a car seat and got hurt or injured, the same kind of negligence, you'd be guilty of the same kind of negligence. Doesn't, from our perspective, it doesn't matter where the child resides. The child was still in that vehicle, whether it was in its mother's womb or in the infant seat. Doesn't matter if your negligence or your even intentional injury, you got another victim.
Very briefly, Mr. Chair. The reason that concerns me so much is right now, if a man gets into a car accident with his wife and causes a miscarriage, he's got the agony of harming his wife, the agony of losing his baby, but he doesn't go to jail for very long, maybe a few days because it's negligent driving right now, maybe an assault charge. But to turn it into homicide, the man now goes to jail for a minimum of a year, up to 10 years, and I don't see that as something I can support.
Okay, why don't you keep going through your sections in concert with Representative Groomberg?
Mr. Chair, just for the record, the act by a woman against herself, I appreciate where you've put it in. You've done exactly what I wanted on that issue.
And where is that at?
Okay.
In version B? Just address version B.
The version B, it is found in two places. One at the top of page 3, lines 1 and 2, and the second on 4, page 4, lines 4 and 5.
And so on page 2, line 25 and 6, there is an applicability standard. Let me finish, please. And it does not apply. It gives a list of where there is not applicability. And then if members turn to page 3 on the top, that's what Representative Groomberg is referring to. It does not apply to pregnant women. And then what's the other one?
The two sections, Mr. Chair. That's the applicability for the two assaults. And for the homicides, the applicability section is at the bottom of page 2, and the new lines are at page 3, lines 1 and 2.
Representative Garrett, do you have a response to that? And I'm giving Representative Garrett latitude because he pulled his amendment. Now we have a question on the adoption of version B. I don't want to just ram version B through, and then he's pulled his amendment, which we were debating on, which might have killed the bill. As Senator Dyson said, you changed my bill, I'll withdraw it. So, I mean, there's consequences for everybody here.
I think I'm a little bit slow on this. Representative Anderson, when we agree to adopt this, if we agree to adopt this new B version, we're agreeing to adopt it for purposes of consideration, right?
For discussion. Okay. That means it's before us, but it hasn't been moved out of the committee.
That's correct. Fine. I just don't see that those of us on the other sides of the two sides of this issue are ever going to agree to get to the consensus on the bill unless the consensus, the compromise I offered was to let's do the same exact penalties that all people on all sides of this issue want, but I don't think we're going to get there on the other stuff, so I think we might as well adopt it and for purposes of discussion and go on.
Senator Dyson.
And I do not recommend adopting of the B version. I'm comfortable with the A version that we put before you, but we offer it as a way for to deal with the issues that came before you here, and I think the version we had before is a superior one that had an awful lot of thought and a lot of debate in it. But I appreciate the concern you all have, and please understand, I'm not recommending the B version. I'm offering it as for your consideration.
Our consideration, and I guess I want clarification. So, Representative Guerra, what you're stating is that in terms of you would comment on the Lacey Peterson wave of legislation, state by state, and you detailed where there are variations of this, and your concern was on the definition of when life begins, and some of these issues that obviously there's philosophical debate that's been occurring on the bill, and your point is that on page 5, section 5, where there's a personhood determination and then subsequently references to unborn child, you wanted those out. Is that correct? I mean, is that why you're objecting to version B? Because you just said I don't like the version in it, but you haven't clarified.
Actually, I think I would, frankly, if the senator doesn't support version B as much as he supports version A, I want to have the fight on version A, and I would hope maybe we could withdraw. I don't care whether we adopt a version A or version B for purposes.
And version A would be the very first version that's in our file. And while I'm getting a head shake, how many versions are there?
Excuse me, that's version U.
Version U is the one we talked about.
Senator Dyson, so you mean version U, because version A was a literal A as an Apple version that you originally had, and you mean version U that was the renovation of it. Okay, because I was getting confused. There actually is a version A, so I'm like, oh, God, Fred wants to go back to A. I'm, Coghill's going to chair the meeting. I'm going to go back to Anchorage to the maternity ward without a baby. Representative Garrett.
Oh, yeah. When you say Lacey Peterson, and frankly, I do want to object to part of this debate. I also agree we should deal with the Lacey Peterson issue. You deal with it by punishing people severely for assaulting a pregnant woman. That's what many states have done. It has nothing to do with Lacey Peterson, whether you introduce this whole concept that will be used in the Roe versus Wade context.
Just for clarification, I just meant that seemed to be the theme of your comment last time, which is I want it to be you were a strict constructionist of the bill, and I just wanted to make an editorial that you're saying B or U does not meet that end, I mean, for the record. So if that's the case, are you accepting B?
I just want to put something on the record.
He would be objecting to it, the adoption of it. Representative Groenberg.
I'm going to withdraw my objection in a moment, but I want to put something on the record. Okay. If the members would look up, we'll call this markup, look at the markup sheets, you'll see at the top of the second page lines that are out lines 7 through 10. For purposes of this paragraph, et cetera, that's gone.
Okay. And for the secretary's benefit, and if someone ever looks at the journal for this, was this given? Is this by Senator Dyson's office? Okay. And there's a document, a 7-page document, and it's labeled "Amended to Exempt a Pregnant Woman from Acts committed against herself or her own unborn child. That's the first line of this document, and there are red lettering that shows the edits.
So I'm going to call that markup, the markup document.
So the markup document is what we'll label this.
That language, and I'm going to refer you on page 3, lines 16 through 19, same language is stricken there. And I'm glad you took that out. And as I understand it, the reason you took that out is because you have exempted by woman the acts of a woman against herself. And that's now redundant. And I'm glad you did that. I will remove my objection. I appreciate what you've done with the B version.
Is there any other objection to adopting version B for discussion purposes? So no discussion, so version B is before us. That articulated. So if Senator Dyson, you just want to wrap up, I guess we've kind of delved into that, but maybe one more time, the ultimate changes that B has made from you, that would help, I think, folks.
And thank you. I and we have not checked the B version to make sure it has the consistency and the accuracy that we all want, you know. And you might want to put it on the record that certainly it's our intention that what Representative Grunberg has looked over in the markup is reflected in the in this, and maybe say something about if any typos or any punctuation things show up as a mistake or don't reflect exactly what you're after here. That
so I think that this should be considered at this point. That
are you kids taking notes? Representative Grunberg speaking. Go ahead.
That there may be some typos or something that that we can take a look at later. Nobody's waiving any rights to cure that. You guys in your office are too.
Well, I don't think there'll be typos if it was from legal services, but your point is if there's, I understand. That being said, Representative Guerra is to this committee probably what Hollis French is to yours, where he has a prosecutorial, public defender, a legal background that, far greater than most of us. And because of your concerns, I think that's one of the reasons the chair held the bill, because your concerns lifted and surfaced concerns for all of us as to the intent of the legislation and the ultimate end and finality of it, what it would do in our state. Do you want to go through B and rearticulate? You started, but when we started the meeting, by going through your consternation on version U, maybe you should then do that on B.
Senator, are you done? Okay. Have you? Are you done presenting B?
Is this my final statement?
Oh, I'll always let you speak. Or go ahead. But
To the concerns that came up before, we have been very careful to put on the record here that there's no intention to this bill to used as a vehicle to attack the Roe v. Wade decision. And also, I could provide for you legal opinions from three different law professors saying that this has no impact on the Roe v. Wade decision, and in, I can't say all of the 28 states, but has never been successfully used, this kind of legislation, to challenge Roe v. Wade, nor has the virtually identical in concept federal law that is the law of the land under federal law and all federal lands in the country. And we have never used, there's nothing here that assigns personhood to a child, to an unborn child. That language is not used, and we were very careful about it. And I just remind you that we as legislators have the right and the responsibility to assign value to other entities that are not a person. We do that with fish and game hunting, rules, personal property, all kinds of things. And there's nothing wrong with you assigning value to a non-person. And as you know, under federal law, it's a crime to crush an eagle's egg. And I didn't mean to be demagoguing the issue here, but what we are establishing here is that an unborn wanted child has value that is recognized and protected in our law. And
we actually have some eagles here to testify. I'm going to reopen public.
So here's a chance that we as legislators, and what we do in our culture is we make law that reflects our cultural values and the prohibitions we put upon ourselves. And every year I always look for bills that don't have numbers on them, dollar signs, you know, that have significance. And I believe what you're about to do here, it is significant. And you are saying that a child, regardless of its state of birth and development, we recognize has value in and of itself. I'm done. Thank you.
And I'm listening. I always get diverted with attention.
And Mr. Chairman, I have to be in a Senate Resources at 2, so I may disappear before you finish.
Understand.
I have great confidence in you. You'll stay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
I just, we're just going to have to end up disagreeing on this. I don't think that I'm the only person, and I don't think that this is even a party issue. I think there are people on both sides of the aisle who have comfort and discomfort with this legislation, and I understand and respect your view that if the version of the bill that comes out here that just includes the penalties but not the unborn child language comes out, you'll think about pulling the legislation because you don't want to see it at that point. So, and that's the version of the legislation that I'm going to work with every fiber of my being to make sure it gets through. So I think I'm going to waste everybody's time if I push through a bill that you're just going to pull. And I know you and I are going to fight with every fiber of our beings on this thing because it's a values issue. So what I'm going to do, Mr. Chair, is move to table this bill in this committee so that I just don't see any use in fighting over a bill that's going to, if it comes out the way that many of us want, is just going to be pulled anyway. So I move to table this bill, Mr. Chair.
Object, Mr. Chairman.
If there's an objection, the motion to table is non-debatable, so I would ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes.
Representative Cott.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
5 yes, 1 no on the motion to table the bill.
So at this stage, the bill is tabled. It can be brought up at any time. What's the procedure on that, Max? Representative Gruenberg?
It's a motion requires a majority of the people present.
It can be picked up any time, Mr. Chairman.
So for the audience listening, that's not a defeat of the bill. It's a holding of the bill in the committee. Based on what Representative Guerra has talked about, it sounds like there will be more work needed or discussion, and that will be occurring if the bill is brought before us again. Okay. We will next go to, House Bill 276. Sorry, Business License Tobacco Endorsement.
Lighter subject.
Yeah. I'm with you on this. You can bend. And House Bill 276 is Representative Cott's bill, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And Representative Cott, as I remember the last time we heard the bill has to do with sanctions and underage sales, tobacco endorsement, kind of the parameter of commercial tobacco and penalties. And we held the bill because there was difficulty ranging from I think from members of the committee that the penalties were too harsh. Others said that maybe the monetary fine was not enough, and I think there was a balance that needed to be made, and Chair McGuire ultimately held the bill and asked that you work with the interested parties, facilitators of the bill, to try to come up with a different derivation of the language, so that the penalties were still strict. However, there wasn't such a punitive nature on the commercial aspect that it became unfair. Can you let us know, have you been able to reach some level of consensus with your
Chairman, and I'll let
endorsers?
Staff. Unfortunately, I wasn't here.
That's okay.
Last time this bill was heard.
So, Mike, if you state your name for the record, and then correct me if I was right or wrong.
Mr. Chairman, Mike O'Hare, staff of Representative Pete Cott. Before you, we have a blank CS version L before you, sir.
Hey.
Excuse me, a new CS version L on HB 276.
Okay, we're all hustling to find that. So, well, how about we take a brief at ease, just to, so we can, you have it? Oh, you're good? Okay, I apologize. So we won't take a brief at ease. So why don't you go through, Mike, staff to Representative Cott, sponsor of the bill, and go through the changes made. And then we will, after hearing those changes.
Oh, I've got it.
After hearing those changes, then we'll go to testimony. And I would urge folks wanting to testify, I can already see them lining up, anti-tobacco and sellers of tobacco, that please testify on the changes. We don't want to revisit the original bill, or we will waste a lot of time. And this bill has been in the committee for, what, over a year? So whether you like it or not, I want to get rolling on it, in other words. Mike.
Mr. Chairman, a brief synopsis of the bill. HB 276 is a business fairness bill, if you will, sir, which basically increases financial penalties for noncompliance of retailers that have a tobacco endorsement for those who sell tobacco products to minors. There was some concern last session regarding the penalties are not substantial enough. Sir.
I apologize, Mike. Boy, I'm normally the best at this. Representative Wilson has brought to my attention that we didn't adopt version L. Will you make the
Thank
motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that we have before us for debate Senate or committee substitute for House Bill number 276, version L.
Hearing no objection, it's...
But,
oh, Representative Grunberg objects.
I'd like to have them go, Mike, to go line by line.
Similar like the other bill.
I am actually interested, and I'm also awaiting a fax, which should be here momentarily. I'm going to have, I think, some objections to it, but I don't yet know what's in it, and I haven't received what my objections may be.
Okay.
So, but first I need to know what the differences are, so I am objecting.
Okay, could we have security take Representative Grunberg? Okay, so it's objected. So this will be, you just, thank you, by the way. That's why we have Representative Wilson here. She knows the committee procedure. So that's been objected to. It's just like the last bill. We're in the discussion purposes. If you could go through, that's the parameter you have to go through the changes.
Mr. Chairman, also in the packet, there's a sectional analysis by legal, alleged legal.
A new one?
Yes, sir.
If I could.
Do you need an at ease, or?
Well, I'm trying to deduct bills.
Okay, let's take a quick at ease.
I don't see this.
We'll reconvene at 1:54, and we have before us House Bill 276. There is version L, remake of it, revisions to it, that Representative Conda has been working with industry on, and that was moved for adoption for discussion purposes by Representative Wilson. Representative Grunberg objected to that because he wanted to know the exact changes in detail. So Michael Hare is here from Representative Cott's office. That's the recap. Why don't you go ahead and go through the changes? Representative Grunberg can interject as he has questions.
Mr. Chairman, and everybody has, hope everybody in the committee has a
copy of the sectional. I'll go over the highlight the changes that have taken place. First, I would like to bring your attention to page 4, line 15, section 5. There's a mandatory subsection of compliance for education compliance. For a person who holds a license endorsement to sell tobacco products, they need to obtain a signed acknowledgement from each of the person's agents and employees who may be in the position of selling tobacco products. The employee or agent understands it's a violation of state law to sell tobacco products to the persons under 19 years of age and compliance with state law and condition of employment or agency. And also certify that the person has an education, compliance, and disciplinary program in effect to ensure compliance. It also refers in section 4 above that, subsection P, if a person who holds an endorsement issued under this section violates subsection F, Mr. Chairman, which is a signage, mandatory signage in the establishment, which states that it is illegal.
You're talking. Sure. I'll get to you in 1 second, Representative Gruber.
I'm totally confused here.
Okay.
Okay.
He is on version L. He's addressing.
I'm looking on version L.
Okay, you bet. And he's on page 4.
What line were you starting on?
He's on page 4. Yeah. And he is on line 15. He's addressing section 5. He's regarding this this subsection that talks
subsection
about
subsection T.
Correct.
It looked to me like the wording in subsection T, page 4, line 16 to 25, is identical to the A version, page 3, lines 5 through 14. Is there any words that are different there? They look like those are identical.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's correct.
I just wanted to know the differences.
Sir, I wanted to bring that to attention because what the new version does is it inserts two penalty matrices. That T is the compliance. And I will go through the changes.
So what you're saying is, Mike, you're saying that version L before us, I'll say the new version that we are debating whether to adopt, has added that not only must you have to have signage, but you must now also have this endorsement? Or is Representative Grunberg correct in saying, wait, the old version had the endorsement too? You hire people and they're trained and they're signing a contract that says we sell to someone under 19, we're fired. And by the way, you, Holiday or Tesoro, also has to have a sign-up that says you can't sell under 19. Wasn't that already in the first bill?
That's through the chair. That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I wanted to bring that to the committee's attention. This is the focal point of compliance, and then we'll go through the changes from there.
I'm sorry I interrupted.
That's all right.
That's okay, but that's fair.
Because penalties are tied to that.
Okay. So the reason he brought that up is to say that, hey, if you violate that, these are the penalties, and these penalties are now changed. My presumption is harsher in version L than what was in the original version. So now go ahead with the changes.
Hold that thought. I don't think that's true.
Okay, and that may not be true.
Mr. Chairman, with that established, I wish to go to page 1, section 1, subsection D. Basically rewrites the current subsection that if a person holds an endorsement under this section, or an agent or employee of the section holds an endorsement under this section, and is in compliance with subsection T of the section at the time of the violation, and has no previous violation, then we get into the penalty matrix of those that are in compliance.
Okay, so it's simplified. You've never violated the rule that says you can't sell to someone under 19, and you've also trained your employees, and you have signage up. So now we're at that. So now suddenly you violate that and yank the signs down, or someone isn't trained, or there is a sale to someone under 19. So now we get to the penalty phase, and now your changes.
Mr. Chairman, the changes have the civil monetary penalties for someone who is in compliance with subsection T, shall they shall impose a fine of $300 and not more than $750 if the person has no prior violations. And there will be no revocation of their license.
So that means it would be $300 may impose. So
may impose.
It's permissive. That means that the department may say we don't want to impose anything. And that was an issue with the committee, that it's like, okay, just to be honest, I mean, what's the penalty? If it's may, then maybe there's no penalty at all. So that's maybe something for the debate later.
And
but
Mr. Chairman, and that's a good point. And just to cut through it real quick, that may was inserted because there's a section of the bill that addresses a hearing officer. So it gives more discretion within an actual hearing procedure, unlike what's currently done today.
And what's currently done today? They're just immediate?
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty.
Okay.
But I think you'll hear it from industry.
Okay. And so it's $300 and not more than $750 and it's to that company, I presume.
Correct. And no suspension of the endorsement.
No suspension of cigarettes. That's for the first violation. Okay.
Correct. And Mr. Chairman, the subsection 2 for the second violation, a fine of $500 and not more than $1,000 to the individual, and may suspend the endorsement for up to 20 days.
Okay. So may. So it could be 1, it could be 2, it could be 20, and that would be through the hearing officer process rather than immediate.
Through the chair, that's correct. Subsection 3 imposes a fine of $1,000 and not more than $2,500 and may suspend the endorsement for up to 45 days if within the 24 months before the date of the department's notice there is a violation. And the individuals were convicted twice of violating subsection T. Subsection 4, a fine of $2,500 and not more than $3,500 may be imposed and may suspend the endorsement for up to 90 days for if a agency, employment, or person was convicted three times.
Now let me ask you a quick question. So if it's mom and pop store, they sell cigarettes in the convenience store, and they have four different stores, let's say in Fairbanks, and at one store there was one violation by a clerk selling to someone under 19, at a second store there was another violation, does each store count as its own violation stream? I believe it does, but
through the chair, I believe it does as well. I can't be sure, but I think so.
Okay. That's what legal services said to me, but I wanted that reiterated, that this bill doesn't change that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, subsection 5, $3,500 and not more than $4,500 as a civil monetary penalty, and may suspend the endorsement for up to 1 year within the 24 months before the date of the department's notice that a person, agent, individual, employee was convicted four or more times of violating Alaska statutes.
So those are the changes.
Those are the changes for the one matrix.
Up to
those that are in compliance.
Okay. Are there any other changes of import?
I thought you were talking about something about a hearing somewhere.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg will get to that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
We're not. I thought that we had.
No, sir. Also, like to bring your attention to trying to make this easier, Mr. Chairman. Page 4, line 26, we will start the next matrix of those that are not in compliance. Page 4, line 26, if a person who holds an endorsement under this section, or an agent employer who holds an endorsement under this section, acting within the scope of the agency, has been convicted of violating the statutes, and the person holding the endorsement is not in compliance, the subsection, the department may impose on the person Then we get into subsection 1 of the penalty matrix, $500 and not more than $750 if the person has not been previously convicted.
So to delineate, Mike, the first matrix was for the company, the second is for the individual?
The second matrix is for those that are not in compliance with subsection T. They don't have an education program. They haven't educated their employees, their staff. They don't have signage up. They are not in compliance.
And what was the first matrix for? I thought that
the
was
first matrix was for those that are...
Are in, okay.
I have an education program.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
They're in compliance.
They have an education program.
That's correct.
I just want the record.
Everybody. That's good.
Thank you.
So then it goes to what, page 5?
Then it goes into
line 5, which is the next tier.
The next tier, line 5, subsection 2, the penalty is for $1,000 and not more than $2,500. And may suspend the endorsement for up to 20 days if within the 24-month period before the date the department's notice that they've been in noncompliance and violation. The next one, subsection 3, $2,500 and not more than $3,500, and may suspend the endorsement up to 90 days within the 24-month period. Subsection 4, line 19. A $3,500 penalty and not more than $4,500 and may suspend the endorsement for up to 12 months if within the 24-month period before the data department's notice there's been a violation. And subsection 5, $5,000 and may suspend the endorsement permanently if within the 24-month period before the data department notice and they're not in compliance.
And if you violate it 6 times, you have to see
the
judiciary for the whole session.
Mr. Chairman, to answer Representative Roekberg's question, I turn to page 6, line 2. We have subsection V. When making a decision under subsection M of the section, and I apologize for the confusion. It is confusing. I'm hopefully
it's a great hockey goalie. I consider it a compliment.
when making a decision under this subsection, the hearing officer shall consider subsection 1, whether a person is in compliance with T or of the section on or before the date department initiates proceedings. Number 2, mitigating factors presented by the person. Was it a human error with a registered device calculator, something along those lines, more on the lines of a human error issue as opposed to a blatant violation. The scope and extent of the person's education compliance disciplinary program under subsection T2 of this section. And then, Mr. Chairman, I wish to go to page 4, line 9, subsection 4. Madam Chairman.
Welcome. Exciting bill. We're about to pass it. Oh. Luckily, there's nobody here to testify.
They've all left.
Not what I said. Okay.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to bring the committee's attention to page 4, line 9, which is subsection 4, section 4, subsection P, that if a person who holds an endorsement issued under this section violates F, they do not have a sign stating that it's illegal to sell tobacco products to a minor under 19 years, or T, subsection, compliance subsection. The department may impose a civil penalty on top of the other penalties of $250 for each day of the violation, but the department may not suspend or revoke the business license endorsement, with a total civil penalty imposed under this section not to exceed $5,000. So this mandates that they be in compliance. And in the sectional analysis on section 4, on the first page of the sectional analysis, section 4370.075 requires a licensed endorsement holder to obtain signed statements. It also requires a person to certify the person has an education, compliance, and discipline program. So we will be requiring them to be compliant. So I believe that's the changes. What this does is it enforces education for selling tobacco products to minors. What could happen to the individuals that sell them? What could happen to the license holders? And it encourages education. The state of Alaska is one of the highest states that comply with the CINAR compliance. Currently, the current statute requires an automatic suspension of an endorsement for 20 days for a first offense, for whatever reason. This will give organizations that are encouraging their employees to be educated and be much more aware of what could happen, the ramifications for selling tobacco products to minors. We encourage your support. Thank you very much.
Through the chair, Chair McGuire, here now. So you're giving somewhat of a credit to those who have educational programs. You're requiring that educational program, giving a credit in terms of the penalty, and then you're lightening up the penalty. I think that was some of the concern of some of the judiciary members, and maybe this bill still doesn't have support, but that was one of my concerns, that hey, someone violates it one time and you get cigarettes pulled and it ends up tens of thousands of dollars in a penalty. That's too much and that's unfair. And I think that's where you tried to come back with a compromise to that end. By shaking heads and some of the folks testifying, maybe that's not been reached. So I would ask the chair, rather than go through a debate or minutia analysis by Representative Gruenberg, unless you have something really compelling, if you could go with a two-minute time limit to each person testifying, you could be done in about 30 minutes or 35 minutes, and then we could get into the finality of the debate.
Yeah. That sounds great.
And you gave a good, thorough...
So we'll come back to him at the end.
Yeah, that would be... Can you stand by?
Madam Chairman, it would be a pleasure.
You have nothing
I thought
to
you'd
do.
Say that. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that one, too.
And thank you guys for holding down the fort for me. I had a CSG executive meeting, and I keep missing them, and they're going to fire me if I didn't go. So anyway, okay, so we are going to do public testimony, limited to 2 minutes each because we have so many folks. I'm going to go ahead and start with people in the room today just to rotate the order. I usually do teleconferencing. So I'll start with Ed Sasser or Sasser.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, most of my concerns were on the A version. I'm glad to see that the clerks have been extracted from this process. I thought they were treated unfairly in the A version, and that's been fixed in this version. I still have concerns about...
Can I interrupt? Who are you with?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Ed Sasser. I'm a private citizen. I'm here because I assisted Representative Harris, now Speaker Harris, in the original drafting. I was a tobacco enforcement coordinator at that time, and the language that we wrote then is being changed now, or being proposed to be changed now. One of the concerns I had that remains in this version is who besides the employer will certify, and I believe we'll have people online who will address that the corporation has an education, compliance, and disciplinary program in effect to ensure compliance. My personal feeling is that the citation would be evidence that they did not have a program in place that would ensure compliance, and there's some circular reasoning to deal with in that regard. The other thing I think people will be addressing online, and I'll let them do that, is the up to 20 days language. You may recall that the law used to be up to 45 days for the first offense. The House Bill 228, introduced I think in 2000, changed that to 20 days. The up to language is cumbersome, and I imagine will continue to be cumbersome and cause a fiscal note, and I'll let other people discuss that in terms of the actual cost that may be in process there. But those are my two main concerns with the L version. Most of my concerns are with the A version.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, next, Ronald Taylor.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
You're the only person smiling in the audience, so.
He's my buddy.
Is that not a good thing?
nice smile.
Thank you.
Welcome.
My name is Ronald Taylor. I'm the program manager for the ASAP program. I'm also representing the Department of Health and Social Services. And we have the primary responsibility for enforcing the tobacco enforcement program. It's ironic because as I sit before you, I testified on another House bill, and Representative Guerra asked me a question with respect to that House bill that we come back each year, and it was on DUI legislation. We come back each year, we change things in the legislation year after year. Is this effective? And now we're back before you, even though we've made substantial changes to this legislation at least 3 years ago, and we're now saying it's not working. Maybe we need to tweak it because it is not accomplishing the goals of the program. The overall goals of the program is to reduce youth access to tobacco products. Overall goal. When the changes in the law took effect in 2003, we dropped our compliance rates, our non-compliance rates, from 30% to 10% in that 1 year period of time. Now we're down to just over 9%. Is it working? Of course it's working. And from a departmental standpoint, we have a problem looking at this bill that now we need to go back and make changes to something that is working and working very well. Any instances that you start plugging in may up to and putting in nebulous language begins to take away the effectiveness of the program, begins to water down in terms of the certainty that a penalty will be imposed, and overall consistency from a statewide perspective that we will enforce, that what we put in place as laws, we mean to be carried out in terms of those who are going to enforce them. The other thing that really concerns me is what Mr. Sasser brought up earlier, which is who's going to enforce the education? Who's going to monitor that? Who's going to certify that? Because that's clearly not articulated in the bill, and if it is, then it is going to have a fiscal note attached to that. When we made the changes to the law in 2003, you sent a very loud and clear message to our department. We are concerned about these rates. We're not in compliance with the Sinar Amendment. What you need to do is a better job of enforcing this to make sure that we are in compliance. What we aggressively did was looked at other states. We received federal technical assistance to come into compliance with Sinar rates. And we adopted all of the best practices that have been recommended. We're talking about a best practice program, and now I'm hearing, well, but that's not good enough. We need to water that down because maybe we're too good in terms of a best practice program. And I think that we all want our system to operate on the basis of best practices. And the last thing I'm going to leave you with is when you're comparing this program to, let's say, the alcohol program, enforcement of alcohol, what this language is doing is taking a step back. In fact, it looks to me like it's very similar to the things that have been adopted in terms of the alcohol legislation, where you've got mandatory training. And let me just give you something that the ABC did in terms of they have no enforceable penalties for business owners, which we do on this in terms of the endorsement. They had a 29% sale rate in February alone for the Kenai Peninsula, even though all clerks are required by law to receive training. They face fines and criminal penalties that can include jail time. Even in the state of Montana, when they began to reduce penalties and began to take away the impact to the endorsements, you begin to see the rates creep back up. For example, 99 went up 33%, 00, 37%. This is from the original number in 98. 01, 46%, 02, 50%, What I'm suggesting to you will occur is our rates will go back up. We will not remain in compliance if we adopt the changes that are being recommended here.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions? Representative Gruenberg.
Do you have documentation to back up your figures on Montana?
Yes, I do.
Could you please produce them to Ms. Szymanski here, who can distribute them to the committee?
I actually have a best practice document that language was taken out of.
Whatever.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like that because I'd like to be able to use that.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to make a comment. You have been doing a very good job because I happen to live on an island, and you came and shut down every single they couldn't buy any cigarettes for like 20 days or whatever the time frame was. And you definitely have been doing a good job with what you've been doing. So
thank you, ma'am.
Representative Anderson?
Just a quick question. You certainly give a good presentation from the department's purview, and you were smart because you said, hey, you as the public policymakers gave us the direction several years ago. We've implemented it, and in your rationale, and it looks like statistically very well. That being said, I just want kind of to acknowledge that there's also the other side, not the smoker side, the illegal smoking, but the sales side, and the fairness and the penalty. And I think even if this version, L, which you don't support currently, isn't the exact means through which we can get the bill passed, I think that if you could at least consider and think of some revisions so that there is not such a harsh penalty at the beginning, and meaning on the first violation, where suddenly cigarettes are removed for 20 days and suddenly of the 200 people that buy cigarettes at a store, 100 don't go, and 75 of those buy gas and their cat food, and pretty soon it's an $80,000 fine. Hence the folks in the audience saying, wait a minute, we don't endorse underage smoking, and smoking may be bad. We're salesmen. We're not tobacco peddlers in the purest sense, but the way this is written, it's so extreme, you have to lighten up a little, and we still think there'll be a fear not to sell, and you will still have your same results. And it's just, I mean, I guess if you have a response, that's fine, too. You're like, you better let me respond.
He looks bigger than you, honey.
Representative.
By the door, though.
Thank you, sir. Representative Anderson, through the chair. Thank you. I appreciate that. I don't disagree in terms of what you're saying, but I think we kind of get off track in terms of saying that these penalties are going to be, that somehow once a citation is issued, that the penalties on the clerks are automatically imposed, the penalties on the business owner are automatically imposed at that particular time. And that's just not true. There are administrative hearings that process has to go through. First of all, there is the actual process of the clerk itself. If the clerk is not found guilty, there is nothing against the endorsement holder. The endorsement holder has a right to go to an administrative hearing process, and it goes through its entirety process. That can take at least 9 months. They have an opportunity to provide any type of defense at those hearings. We're not saying if the issue that you're trying to raise to me right now is a due process issue, I would spin this back to you and say it would be the same thing for me in terms of dealing with DUIs, whereas a police officer is not making a judgment call in terms of, oh, well, this may be a due process issue. No, they make the arrest. They let the court sort out the due process issue. We have administrative and judicial processes in place that actually deal with due process issues.
And just to respond, no, it wasn't a due process. It was level of penalty. And it was, if you want to be a parallel to alcohol, it's telling a bar, we're going to install a Dram Shop Act, and we're going to say if someone drives drunk from your establishment, you lose your license for a month. They would say, oh, my God. I mean, give me a little more latitude. We don't condone it. We have TAM-sponsored sales bartenders and service providers, but that's too harsh. That's the realm upon which I think we had consternation in the committee. Some of us did, that it's the upfront penalty on the sales agency, the company, the again, I won't say names, but the commercial aspect of it, not the due process and not the philosophy. We don't want people to smoke underage. There's a good hearing process, but it's too strict on the first violation. That was my
opinion. Representative Cott and then Guerra.
You sat through one of those hearings with the hearing officers?
No, I haven't personally. I have a chief investigator that's probably online who has sat through those hearings.
Who's actually a hearing officer, or is he just...
He is the investigator that was part of the process itself.
He's the prosecutor, right?
In that particular instance, yes.
On those hearings go, because okay. That's my understanding, it's not quite the way you have suggested.
That's what I heard. I'm hearing a difference.
I've looked at a number of states. I've got a list here. It looks like most of the compliance rates since the federal guidelines came out have increased. Of the ones that I have, and I'll state that I don't have all 50 states, but I have a majority of them, most of the compliance rates are higher than Alaska, and yet very few have a revocation on the first offense or first citation. How can you suggest that perhaps by reducing or eliminating the revocation on the first offense that it will have a dramatic effect on the compliance rates when there's evidence to support the contrary?
And through the chair, I'm going to just add to that. I think what he's getting at is, so you really think that if we say on the first violation we're not going to remove the cigarettes, you'll be charged a fine, but some have said it's just a slap on the wrist. Is your fear that if you loosen the penalty on the convenience store, then they will say, hey, let's loosen our supervision and education to our clerks, and if you sell to someone under 19, oh well, the first violation isn't that big a deal. I mean, do you really think that'll happen if
yes.
we lighten it up a little?
Yes, I do, through the chair. Representative Cott, you raised two issues, though. The first issue had to do with the rates that you were saying was higher in other states.
What I'm saying is compliance rates in, I'll just give you a couple here, Arizona, Delaware, Florida, Hawaii, Louisiana, they're all higher than Alaska. And in some of these states, for a first offense, for instance, Louisiana, which has a 93% compliance rate, their first offense is $50. I mean, so it must be working for them. Why wouldn't that work for us? And in the light of us having a substantially higher fine than $50, in this piece of legislation, we've actually increased the fines.
Representative Cott, through the chair, are you looking at the overall picture, though? Are you looking at the prevention efforts that they put in place? Are you looking at the overall culture that they have operating that system in? And are you looking at the cooperation that they actually have from the vendors? I mean, that's not being represented by the statistics that you're giving to me right now.
Now, I can't comment on that. All I'm looking at is their overall outcome of the program that they've implemented that they have to then turn into the feds for their grant money. That's the only thing I have. I mean, I don't know what kind of culture they deal with. I assume they still have kids in their states. I assume there's still underage smoking going on. But it just appears to me that when we passed legislation a few years ago, we overreached and went too far. And that wasn't unanimous support by both the bodies in this building, mind you. So I'm just suggesting that perhaps we went overboard, and by cutting back, it will not have a substantial effect, as it is evidenced by the other states. That's the only thing I'm saying.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Kerr.
Yeah, I don't know if this will change my view on the bill or at all, but maybe it will. Does I understand that the number of kids who've purchased cigarettes has gone down, but we haven't seen a reduction in the number of kids who use cigarettes, have we? That's going the other way, isn't it?
I think we have. I think you actually will have people that will testify on that.
So in the last few years, in recent years?
I don't have the exact figures. I'd rather let them testify about that, Representative Garrett, through the chair.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Oh, Representative Gruenberg.
I had asked you for the statistics in Montana, but my logic was flawed. The statistics themselves are meaningless without knowing what Montana did with its legislation and enforcement. I also need to know what the changes were. We can't look at it as a black box. So I need to have with that, Mr. Taylor, the changes in enforcement in Montana. Was it a change in the law? Was it less funding for enforcement? Was it something else? What were all the changes? And then we can assess what the statistics are. Otherwise, it's meaningless.
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, I'll have to get that for you. I can get that to get that fax to you.
And Representative Cott was citing some other statistics, readings, and I don't know if we have those. I'd be grateful if Mr. O'Hare or somebody could get us those other state stuff, too.
To be careful coming to this committee, because Representative Gruenberg assigns homework on a regular basis.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And they're tested, you see. So.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks. Next person I have is Mike Ellardini. Okay. It's like you're here from Ketchikan.
Right.
Wow.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Mike Ellarding. I'm the president of Northern Sales Company of Alaska. Northern Sales Company is a wholesale distribution company doing business based in Southeast Alaska. We wholesale a number of grocery products. Part of what we sell is cigarettes and tobacco products. Last year, I supported this bill on April 19th. I'd like my comments from April 19th to become part of the record for this hearing as well. We thank Representative Cott and his staff for a fine bill that we think is will improve Alaska's law in enforcing prohibition of cigarette sales to minors. Tobacco dealers in the state have a special social responsibility to prohibit underage tobacco sales, and they're doing a good job. Since 2002, Alaska retailers have shown progressive reductions in retail availability of tobacco products to minors. The Alaska legislature and the Governor Murkowski's administration has done a good job prohibiting underage tobacco sales with vigorous laws and regulations. Alaska has some of the toughest laws and regulations in the nation prohibiting underage tobacco sales. One of the best ways to prohibit underage tobacco sales is through the mechanism of price. Alaska is fourth in the nation in terms of taxation on tobacco products, only behind Rhode Island, New Jersey, and Washington. So we're doing a good job in terms of keeping the price of tobacco high. Also, last year or 2 years ago, Alaska passed the Unfair Cigarette Sales Act, which prohibits predatory pricing of cigarettes to use cigarettes or tobacco products as a loss leader. Nationally, smoking age in the United States is 18. In Alaska, the smoking age is 19. So we're already one step ahead of the other states. Only Alabama, New Jersey, and Utah have a smoking age equal to Alaska's smoking age at 19. Current enforcement of Alaska law has been vigorous and has in fact helped make retailers aware of the penalty for selling cigarettes to minors. But Alaska is the only nation in the union that has a mandatory 20-day license suspension for a first offense. And contrary to Mr. Taylor's testimony, respectively, we would disagree that that is a denial of due process, because Alaska does not allow a retailer who has a clerk guilty of selling tobacco products to a minor to have any affirmative defense. HB 276 corrects this deficiency and also increases financial penalties to retailers who have been found guilty of selling tobacco to a minor. HB 276 also provides an incentive to retailers to provide an aggressive and rigorous training program to their staff. And if they have this vigorous and rigorous training program, then there are incentives in terms of reduced penalties to the retailer that would encourage them to train their staff. And finally, sales clerks who are aware of the minimum age laws and store policies and who have received extensive training are better equipped to reject attempted purchases by minors. And that's what it's all about. We want these people to be trained. They're the frontline people. They're usually entry-level position, the lowest paid people in the store. They have the responsibility of enforcing state law to prohibit underage tobacco sales. And it's paramount that we train these people, and HB 276 provides a training component that gives the incentive to retailers to train their staff so that their staff will have the tools necessary to prohibit an underage sale. We, our company, and like companies, encourage this committee to pass 276, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Anderson.
Very quick question. Recognizing that you obey the law in your business and work hard not to make sure underage smokers smoke, what would you calculate as one of the stores? I see some of the advocates for the stores behind you. What would you calculate is an average amount lost based on my hypothetical? First time, 20 days, mom and pop store that has a pretty good influx of patronage with gas, let's say a gas station, convenience store, from jerky to Snapple to dog food. I'm thinking of a Holiday where I go when I'm out of cat food.
Representative, through the chair, our base of business is in Southeast Alaska, where it's a mix of business and we have a lot of small independent shops. So a lot depends on the mix of the business. Usually in a grocery store, for example, grocery stores in Wrangell, Sitka, and my town of Ketchikan, if they are socked with a 20-day license suspension, what happens is it changes buying patterns. So for example, I'm used to going to City Market to buy all my groceries, and now all of a sudden they no longer sell cigarettes. So instead of going to that one grocery store, I'll change my pattern to another grocery store. So it could be hundreds of thousands of dollars for a 20-day license suspension, but over time what happens is it changes the buying pattern, and a business owner will all of a sudden now, who is used to enjoying a regular customer, because they can no longer sell cigarettes or other products, their customers are going to go to their competitor. So it's not only a loss of existing sales during the suspension, but it's a change of buying patterns for the future.
Hey, Representative
Kara. Maybe you said this already. Have your stores ever had a license suspended? And I just want to know how it works.
Right. This law doesn't impact me as a wholesaler.
Okay.
We don't sell directly to consumers. But what our company has done, we've taken a proactive approach. We've partnered up with the state, Mr. Sasser, and also a industry program. Provide training programs to retailers. So the answer is no.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to sort of, it would help me visualize a real world example of a company that had its license suspended, how long, maybe what the sales lost were. And
no, this does not affect me directly as a wholesaler.
There's a couple votes.
There will be, yes.
Up.
Yeah.
Perfect. Representative Groomberg.
Madam Chair, I would like to, at some point today, have a little panel. Some people say there's a due process violation. Some people say there's not. I'd like to get them all up at the table at the same time. I want to see in the law where the alleged due process violation occurs, what the problem is, and I want to see where this bill cures it. But I'd like, and I don't know if you're going to do that or these other people are, but here. Madam Chair, if we could have them at the same time. That concerns me if
well,
there's a due process.
I'm not going to have everybody come up at the same time, but when folks are testifying, if you want to respond to Representative Groenberg's blanket question, particularly coming up next are folks from Tesoro and Holiday who have been personally impacted, so they can talk about both the process and the due process aspects of the bill.
I want to hear from the lawyers.
Very briefly.
Representative Anderson.
Perhaps Mike was, I think, thorough, and so was Ron, and I appreciate that. Your brevity and then your conciseness is critical for us to deliberate quickly, but thoroughly. That being said, perhaps the remaining testifiers could restrict their testimony not on the ills of smoking, which is documented, not on whether or not to sell under 19. I don't think anyone here from these groups is suggesting that they would do that or not have a good education program for their employees. But I would ask that they address the fairness and equity in the due process. Mike has said it's not fair. It's an extreme amount of money. Ron has said, well, it may be amount of money, but it's curbed smoking to underage kids. Pardon me, not curb smoking, but curb purchases of smoking, which ultimately reduces underage smoking. If they could address it in that parameter, that would help us, I think.
Representative Anderson, to the chair.
Smoking's bad, or we, you know, blah blah blah.
Representative Anderson to the chair. Mr. Rush from Holiday is here, and I think that he will address your concerns regarding due process, and he's prepared to talk about that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next, Suzanne Minor.
Tom, thank you.
Thank you.
More popcorn?
American Harvest. And then next up, I have Kip Knutson from Tesoro and Steve Rush from Holiday. And that's all the folks I have signed up in the room. So if you're not one of those three people and you want to testify in the room, go ahead and sign up outside. And then I'll get to the folks on teleconference next. Okay, so Suzanne, she's coming.
Don't be scared, Suzanne. She says never.
Hand up.
I'll pass it around.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Suzanne Minier. I represent the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association. I serve as Director of Advocacy. And I'm here today to express grave concern about House Bill 276 because of the threat to the lives of Alaskan children and thus to the future of Alaska. Alaska's current tobacco enforcement laws work. They have effectively curbed illegal sales of tobacco to minors, and that translates to saving lives. The issue before you today is one of public health, and we believe the current tobacco enforcement law is reasonable, it's effective, and it's appropriate. This is the Tobacco Prevention Control Program's annual report. If you've not seen it yet, it's titled Preventing Addiction, Saving Lives, and copies have been presented to Representative Guerra's question earlier. On page 2, there is a graph that indicates the reduction in high school smoking. So we wanted to point that out. The program, this report does document that a comprehensive and sustained tobacco program of prevention and control with tobacco enforcement is a critical piece. Page 16 of the report refers to the enforcement program in Alaska, and I won't actually not make the comments that I had prepared because they've been made today, but I want to point this to the committee. They demonstrate the things that have been discussed as far as the reduction of sales and how the law is working. Compliance data for last year confirm that only a small minority of Alaska's 1,700 retail tobacco vendors are now selling to minors. Stated another way and more specifically, better than 90% of Alaska's tobacco retailers are getting it right, and they're managing the very serious responsibility of selling a highly addictive, dangerous product, which is tobacco. Also distributed is a graph, and it speaks to the issue of what Mr. Taylor has already presented, and I'll just point it out. It's pretty dramatic. We see in 2002, when we did not have the enforcement law that we have today, and then the very next year, the drop in 2003, 2004, 2005. Additionally, we know that the purchase of cigarettes by Alaska's high school students has dramatically declined. In 1995, 29% of Alaskans' teens reported the self-purchase of cigarettes. In 2003, that number has been reduced to 13%. These results are something that we ought to take great pride in, and now is not the time to roll back our tobacco enforcement efforts. As I conclude, I wish to highlight four photos from page 16 of this annual report. These are still photos that have been taken from the counter-marketing youth prevention ad, which has run on Alaska's television stations. It's entitled, Still Can't Quit. What we see is a strong-looking young boy in an exam room looking at the x-ray film of his diseased lungs. And he states, and I quote from the report, I'm 15 years old. I started smoking when I was 11. I'm addicted to cigarettes. I found out that I was hooked about 3 weeks after I started. Now I have spots on my lungs, and if I don't quit smoking, they can turn to cancer. It scares me, and I still can't quit smoking. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I appreciate your time and your thoughtful consideration of this important public health issue. I'm happy to address any questions that you or the committee may have. I know that there are many of the people in the LIOs that are waiting to share their concern related to this bill, so I'm happy to address questions now or after that.
Thank you, Suzanne. Representative Gruenberg, Cott.
Ms. Minor?
Guerra.
Minier.
Minier. Could you spell that, please?
M-E-U-N-I-E-R. IER.
Ms. Minier, you represent the Heart Association.
Heart Association, yes, sir.
I assume that your main goal is to cut down on the illegal sales.
Our main goal is to prevent...
In this bill?
In this bill, we want to save lives through the prevention of...
Cut down on illegal sales.
...of minors receiving tobacco, yes.
If that could be accomplished and still let the businesses stay open, but could be accomplished in a slightly different way, would you accept that?
If there was another proposal, of course we would look at that.
I do have one. Instead of shutting down the businesses, if they're found to be in violation, how about requiring that a portion of the money they make go to health organizations like yours?
Through the chair, my comment would be that, of course, worthy organizations are always grateful to have donations received and contributions
made. Or health or
made.
Something like that.
Sure.
You see what I'm saying.
Are you passing envelopes around to the audience?
We actually now can do it online and with Visa.
Or some combination of that.
When we look at what we have in place today and look at what was in place a few years ago, which as we look at this bill, this is returning to that point, we see that temporary suspensions have impact. I think there was a comment made earlier in testimony about how can we cut back and not receive the same results? Is there a way that we can reduce the sanction and penalty? And I fear that that's a risk far too great to take. I don't know that we know that. What we do know is that what is in place now is working.
Thank you.
Representative Cott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The example you pointed out, 11-year-old got hooked. You don't think that was a consequence of him purchasing from one of these retailers underage, would you?
Well, I don't know that. I don't know how he acquired his cigarettes the first time.
I doubt very seriously that that would have been the case. I mean, we've grown up all these years, but I'm not sure 11-year-old looks like 19. Did your organization receive any of the grant money that the state receives through the federal arrangement?
The American Heart Association receives no federal or government funding.
No state funding?
No state funding.
Representative Gruenberg's idea would certainly go a long ways toward your overall goal. I mean, your overall goal is to reduce the amount of smoking among Alaskans. Is that not a correct statement?
That would be true. Yes, Representative Cott.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sometimes statistics are very, very useful, but sometimes we jump to a conclusion that the thing that we want, we always want to jump to the conclusion that the good statistic is a result of the thing that we want. On this one, I mean, it seems clear to me that that childhood tobacco use has gone down because of maybe all of the stuff that we've been doing, the TV ads, the limitations of access to kids, and all that sort of stuff. But the question really here is not whether that's working, but whether this bill will affect those statistics. And so let me just ask you this. I mean, what's your best case? I mean, I guess the question I'd like to address, and so there's probably no answer, but the question I'd like addressed is, if we maintain the same level of advertisement funding, the same level of public education for kids, maintain the law that says you still can't buy if you're under 19, give me your best case why I should worry that making the change in the bill that allows for non-suspension the first sale and the other things the bill does, why that insular change will have an impact on the favorable statistical trend that we're seeing.
Through the chair, I'm not sure, Representative Guerra, if we can know that for sure. What we do know is what is working now and what was not working prior.
I appreciate that.
I guess it's sort of my way of saying, and if other people have a different response, that's fine, but it's sort of my way of saying that I guess it wouldn't be fair to Representative Cott's bill to say that if his bill were in place, that we wouldn't have seen those reductions. I don't know what the answer is to that. Maybe it would be fair to say. I don't know. So that's what I'm. It would be relevant to me if people have an answer.
Through the chair, I would agree, Representative Guerra, that it's hard to know. Again, we can only look at what we have today and what we had before. And as has been pointed out, a comprehensive, sustained tobacco program is the best practices recommended and that we are seeking to implement here in Alaska. And an enforcement piece is part of that, and it's working.
And then just to follow up on what Representative Guerra said, and that's the point of this hearing from my perspective as the chair, is that when we first heard the bill, I mean, I'm very supportive of your efforts and very supportive of people not smoking, to be blunt, all people. And I make no bones about it. That being said, my job as Judiciary Chair is to be fair. And Representative Cott is a member of this body and deserves to have his bill heard, and we did hear it. And then I decided I didn't want to hear it again. And I was approached time and time and time again.
By me.
To ask, and Representative Cott and others in this audience today, to appeal to me to at least hear them out and hear their perspective. And what Representative Guerra is talking about is really the only thing that was compelling at all to me. It is this idea that I don't want our numbers to go down. And so that was my initial response, was I'm thrilled that we've gone from 30% to 10%. I'm thrilled that we have some of the toughest laws. I'm thrilled that we have some of the best statistics. And I don't want to change it. The perspective that others have is that could you get at a reduction in that rate by being slightly more fair? And that's what I'm trying to find out. I don't know the answer either, but the point of this committee hearing is at a minimum to allow those folks who feel that it is unfair to have their voices heard and to have Representative Cott's perspective heard as well, and as a sponsor of the bill. And I think that's the difficulty, is how do you tweak out what has made the difference and what hasn't? And where, I'm more sympathetic to the first offense. The second and third offenses, I'm really not. And I don't really care what the reasoning is, because at that point you've continued to fail, and you ought to be punished. But on the first offense, I'm more sympathetic, because we all make mistakes. And if you've got a company that's making legitimate efforts in training and really trying, and they have a slip up, I'm sympathetic to it to a degree. But I don't also want to ratchet it back so far that we end up back with these statistics of 30%. So that's where I sit. And anything you can supplement today's hearing with that might help me in that regard, in the statistics, or where you feel you could push that line or can't.
And Madam Chair, could you also acknowledge the negative on the business? I've had conversations with you, and I respect you so much, because you're a purist, but you're also pragmatic and fair in your balance of this. And when we talked in my office, we talked twice. So maybe you could give your perspective, I think, with the eloquent sympathy given by the chair, which I appreciate, regarding the potential after one violation times 15 stores. Pretty soon on Sunday, when I'm getting the Sunday paper and some cereal, that store's closed because there were so many violations in terms of, so many punitive in nature days withheld on the cigarettes that, as talked about, it exacerbated out to groceries, gas, and other things. And have you weighed that in your analysis when Representative Gruenberg says, wait a minute, how about a donation? Or wait a minute, how about after the first violation you go harsher?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson, for your comments and for the thoughtfulness, as has been expressed, for all of the committee and the sponsor of the bill, to the issues. And I think when I consider the things that have been shared, it's important to remember where we're at today, that we have 90%, better than 90%, of our 1,700 vendors in Alaska that are complying with the current law. And to be convicted of a violation, one has to fail a compliance check. It's not failing if a citizen sees what seems suspicious as a sale or underage. It's a compliance check where the intern working on behalf of the state has to tell the truth when asked their age, has to supply legal ID. And it, as I sit and look at this, I think this is a small number of businesses that are having trouble with this. Most of our businesses are getting it right. They're being responsible with the highly addictive, deadly product of tobacco.
Fair enough. Okay, thank you, Suzanne. Next, I have Kip Knudsen and then Steve Rush.
What time are we going until today?
Yeah, it's a good question.
7 or 8.
No. Can people go to 3:30? And then what we'll do is we'll just stop where we are and pick up on Monday.
I was just curious. That's all.
Yeah.
Do you recommend, Madam Chair,
the
third bill? Should you, folks waiting on the third bill should, because they've been waiting patiently.
I wasn't going to.
Yeah, they weren't going to anyway. Yeah.
Here.
Linda, you guys are free to go.
3-2-5.
At this stage, we've got 15 more people to testify on this bill. So
Linda's like, now you tell me.
No. It's tough to gauge. I was thinking about setting it aside and going to that, but I'll just keep going through and we'll end at 3:30 exactly, so whoever we're on at that point, because people have got to get to their other meetings. Judiciary isn't your whole life, I realize. Okay, Kip?
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kip Knudsen. I'm a government relations manager for Tesoro Alaska. I'm one of the least educated guys in the audience here, so I'm kind of warm up for Steve Rush, quite frankly. I'm here to speak in favor of Representative Kott's bill, and specifically there's a draft CS. I understand we're most favorable to that language. Tesoro operates convenience stores in 16 states in western United States, and we can tell you even if HB 276 passes, Alaska will have the most stringent laws of any of those states that we operate in. First and foremost, Tesoro Alaska has a very strong no underage tobacco sales culture, and I'm thrilled to be able to tell you that. That's a very strong, important item for me personally, and I'm going to tell you a little bit today about how we put our money where our mouth is. Before we put our customer service employees to work selling the tobacco products, they have to complete an orientation, and they're tested, and it's they have to pass it, period, 100%. In addition, we send most of our employees, not everyone, but most of our employees to the techniques for alcohol management, which is a prohibited substances training primarily, and there's a lot of overlap between alcohol and tobacco, obviously. The techniques are very similar. So, on a statewide basis, we're probably way up there as far as trying to prevent underage sales by getting education out to our employees. We work very hard at it. Our management is very engaged in the concept. Each quarter, we conduct our own internal stings. We have separate stings both for tobacco and for alcohol. And obviously, those have been quite effective, we think. Each store manager is briefed on a monthly basis on the stings, both the internal and the state-run stings, and there's informational session, how can we do better, et cetera. Now, we're not perfect. As public records indicate, we have had 13 violations since the year 2000. Now, we operate 31 convenience stores statewide, but we have had no second-time violations since 2000. And 31 convenience stores. Something that will be of interest, I think, to some of the line of questioning, there's been no difference in our violations before this law was put in place and after the law was put in place. We seem to be stuck in the same averages. And that's this gets to the main point. Training customer service employees is a bit like raising kids. You can work really hard, give them the best education possible, but at some point they're out on their own, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's up to them. I just want to tell you that we impose the severest punishment on ourselves because usually in a sting, if an employee is caught, that employee is terminated. And that expense to our company is far higher than any state-imposed penalty, suspension of the license, a dollar fee. Recruiting and retaining employees is clearly one of the most expensive things we do in our company. And I can tell you, I think on all 13 violations, the employee was dismissed. I mean, they were caught red-handed. There was no question. They were dismissed. We support stiff penalties for noncompliance and always have. We have a very good relationship, we believe, with the state's enforcement staff and work with them. They treat it, a lot of the stings, as an educational opportunity, and we appreciate that. However, you don't always get that luxury sometimes with bureaucracy. So if the law can be changed and improved to sort of buffer us, perhaps, if the enforcement staff ever did change, we would appreciate that. Again, our goal is similar to the legislature's goal and the Heart Association's goal, no underage tobacco sales. And I just want to reiterate that. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Gruenberg?
If this were changed, the bill were changed, so that, let's say, for the first violation, instead of suspending your license for 20 days, a portion of the proceeds, significant portion of the proceeds, maybe all the proceeds from tobacco sales or something like that, were to be diverted to health state organization or something, would that be preferable?
I
know it's a very general question, but so you could stay open and not have the collateral consequences of the loss of your business, but make no profit as a result of this.
I'm sure it would be preferable to a 20-day suspension, and it would just underpin our existing community relations program. We're fairly decent donors right now to the heart and lung associations in the state, so I'm sure we wouldn't have too much trouble with that if it was going to the right organizations, I guess, is the only disclaimer I might have is, which organizations is it going to. So.
And through the chair, you give to all the patrol community patrols in Anchorage. I know you gave to Northeast and to Nanaka for gas vouchers and for photography equipment. So those things you're saying would be diminished if you're losing revenue.
Well, could be. But, certainly being able to vend the product would be preferable to not being able to do it for 20 days. As you've all mentioned, it sort of changes your customer makeup.
Okay, thank you, Kip. Mm-hmm. Okay, Steve Rush.
Thanks. A violation of due process, I think.
Okay, and then next up will be Tammy Green, Joe Darnell, then Roger Hames. Welcome to House Judiciary.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Rush. I'm the Director of Corporate Compliance and Legal Counsel for Holiday Companies. We are a privately held Minnesota-based corporation doing business in approximately 12 states. I did previously testify on this bill back in April, and I would like to reference that, incorporate my comments for the committee, if I may please do so. We enthusiastically entered this marketplace in April of 2004 when we acquired 26 convenience stores previously owned and operated by Williams Express. Since that time, in that two-year time period, we have been cited three times for alleged underage sales of tobacco products to minors. I'd like to point out that two of those occurred within just a couple of months of our acquiring all these units when we were trying to get our arms around our operations, including the training, education and training of our sales associates. We have a very comprehensive and proprietary computer-based training program, amongst other things, to train our sales associates on this very critical issue. Since then, we've only had one citation, so I think Holiday's record of excellence in this area is something to be extremely proud of. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 276, and I want to address the due process issue because I know that's an issue of great concern to the committee. However, if I may point out at the beginning, there was an earlier question as to what sort of loss of revenue is a retailer looking at for a 20-day endorsement suspension, and I think that's where the fairness equity issue is here. Due to the unfortunate sale of a $5 pack of cigarettes, and as regrettable and as lamentable as that is, We're human. We're all going to make mistakes. But based upon the loss of revenue for 20 days for tobacco, obviously, but for collateral sales that we lose, gasoline, inside sales relative to pantry and drink bar, for some of our higher volume units, we will be deprived of revenue in excess of $100,000 for that 20-day endorsement suspension period. That pays for the salaries on an annual basis for three or full-time sales associates. So it's critical that we do not lose that revenue for a first offense. Addressing the due process concerns, however, I want to confine most of my testimony to that because I know there is great concern there, is a fundamental premise, constitutional premise, of the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and Article 1, Section 7 of this state's Constitution, that no individual be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's why we have courts before people are sent to prison or in a civil cases before they're found liable and subject to some sort of monetary sanction. This bill is unconstitutional. When it was enacted in 2001, the penalty provisions for the endorsement holder specifically state that the hearing officer is to only hear a limited amount of issues before rendering a determination. And in this particular context, all the hearing officer hears and all the state has to prove is the underlying criminal conviction of the sales associate. As soon as that's introduced, our liability is automatic without being able to offer any evidence contrary to prove that we were not negligent and we shouldn't be found responsible under the statute. I've attended these hearings before. They're extremely frustrating for me as a lawyer because I'm not allowed to defend my client. Now, the state will probably testify, and hearing officers do say to retailers, oh, introduce evidence, whatever evidence you want. But the statute specifically says that a hearing officer is limited to hearing the following questions, and one of them is, was there an underlying conviction of that sales associate? And I would direct you to 43.70.075 subdivision M, the last part of that paragraph, which specifically states that is the sole. Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. 43.70.075 subdivision M.
On page 3 of the bill.
And Madam Chair, you stated that the bill is unconstitutional. You meant the current statute.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, you're correct.
The hearing process you believe is unconstitutional in terms of due process based on what you just said.
Correct. The current statute. I do apologize for the slip. Because of the underlying criminal conviction, that acts as collateral estoppel in the subsequent civil proceeding on the issue of culpability of the retailer. That is what attaches liability and responsibility to the retailer, and that is blatantly unconstitutional. I would direct you, to the extent that you want to take a look at further authority, a 1995 Alaska Supreme Court case entitled Spenard Action Committee, that's S-P-E-N-A-R-D, Action Committee versus Lot 3, Block 1, Evergreen Division. It is a 902 Pacific 2nd, 766,
1995.
It's a 1995 case, 902 Pacific 2nd, 766. And this case specifically held that a criminal conviction of a non-party, the criminal conviction of a non-party, may not be admitted at a subsequent civil trial as evidence of the facts on which the judgment rests. The sales associate is cited for an alleged sale of tobacco. What immediately then happens is, within a matter of weeks or days, the sales associate usually pleads guilty. The maximum fine is $300. The statute refers to the crime of negligent sale of tobacco to an underage individual. We're not a party to that action. We're given no notice of that action. But once that sales associate is convicted, that is the evidence that is then taken to a hearing to prove our guilt without us being able to offer any evidence that we were not negligent in the handling of this tobacco product. You cannot hold a party who is not a party to a proceeding to the facts or conclusions of that case. And because that prior conviction acts as collateral estoppel to the issue of liability under the current law, it is unconstitutional because it is blatantly unfair as it violates our due process rights under the federal and state constitutions. That's where the due process analysis is, and that's where HB 276 does correct that problem. If you look in the bill, I believe it's...
Sir, do you have a page cite in the opinion?
I have...
What page? I've got the opinion in front of me. Let's see what you're talking about.
It's subdivision or holding area 20. I have a Lexis version.
Head note 20?
Head note 20.
Let's see, I'll find that. Okay.
HB 276 rectifies that problem by adding, if you look on page 6, subdivision V, it's on line 2, because it allows us to show our compliance with subsection T, which is the education and training component, plus having the sales associate execute a document that we've instructed them as to the lawful legal age for purchases of tobacco products, and that they must comply with that as a term and condition of employment, plus the education and training component that I referred to. But it also allows us to present mitigating factors of our innocence, of our good faith compliance with the law. All we're asking is a fair hearing as a crucial component of HB 276. We just want to exercise our constitutional rights to present evidence of our guilt, the evidence of our good faith efforts of compliance in this area, and meeting all the legitimate concerns of the folks that have been testifying concerned about tobacco usage. We strongly support that. The only difference in our philosophy is that we're in retail, and as part of our product line, we're selling tobacco. But that is our only divergence of opinion. Given the time constraints, and I realize that you do have many witnesses to take, I'll end my comments other than to thank you for this time period and to discuss this important issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You'll be disappointed to know that, I mean, what happens on these constitutional issues, sometimes we're able to tell whether something's constitutional or not. Sometimes it's just one of us saying it is and the other one saying it's not, and we go, it is, and the other person says it's not, and that really doesn't get us anywhere. So I know that you feel that the current law is unconstitutional. It would help us if there's been an Alaska opinion on the issue, or maybe there's been a series of lower court opinions. But what's the status of the law on this statute and the challenges that the tobacco selling companies have made to this statute in Alaska?
There are currently legal challenges to the statute.
Any rulings?
Not yet. There is a pending decision before the Alaska Supreme Court on this issue. Other entities, I'm not aware of where they are in the process. The three citations that I referred to relative to Holiday, because of our deep belief that there are constitutional infirmities, we are pursuing our right on an appellate level to have this reviewed.
Just very quickly, so there's a case up at the Alaska Supreme Court. They haven't decided it yet. That means there's been a Superior Court decision. What was the Superior Court decision on that case?
The Superior Court decision affirmed the hearing officer's decision that the statute wasn't unconstitutional.
Just in fairness, I mean, it's probably not absolutely clear that this law is unconstitutional. I would take it there are arguments on both sides, but...
The hearing officer, I'm sorry, the decorum, I apologize for missing it, Chair McGuire, Representative Guerra. The decision at the lower hearing was that they did not have the authority to rule the statute unconstitutional or not. So they really didn't, as I understand it, get to the merits and discussions.
So the Superior Court didn't rule on the constitutional issue?
I don't believe so. I have not reviewed that opinion, but the hearing officer said, I don't have the authority to rule one way or the other. And I believe that was the issue on appeal.
And that's just my instinct is this, the hearing officer can't rule whether it's constitutional or not, but the Superior Court could have. So my instinct is they probably did address the issue. If they affirmed the hearing officer, they probably said it's not unconstitutional. And then we'll really wait for the Supreme Court to say whether it's not is or it's not. It's not a big issue for me. In the end, we want to come up with a process that's fair. So whether or not it is so unfair that it falls below the constitutional protection isn't the biggest issue for me. So it's not going to. We could certainly come up with something that's more fair than the minimum amount the Constitution requires. So it's not a big issue for me. It's just. It made me bristle a little bit. My suspicion is that this law, the current law, is not clearly unconstitutional, but we'll wait for an opinion.
Thank you, sir. Graham.
Representative Gruenberg?
Yes, I would like a copy of the Superior Court decision.
Sure.
And I'd like to know, and if that could be distributed to the committee staff, Ms. Zemanski, then she'll get it to everybody. Mr. Rush, I'd like to know... how long ago the case was submitted to the Supreme Court? What was the status? Have you had oral argument yet?
Chair McGuire, Representative Gruenberg, this case does not involve my company, so it is Mendenhall Valley Tesoro, which is I hate to use the word jobber, but it's not a Tesoro corporate unit. It is owned and operated by an independent entity that is using their brand. I understand, Representative Gruenberg, that the matter has been briefed and the last materials were submitted to the court in December. Given the time frame for oral argument and rendering a decision, counsel that I've consulted with representing Holiday have told me that we probably will not have a decision for about 16 months.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Representative Anderson?
Very brief. So in a nutshell, what you've stated to us that I understand is that there's a financial burden that is unfair in terms of the balance between curbing underage smoking and fairness to the retailer. But secondly, more importantly, in your opinion, absent a Supreme Court ruling, there is a due process, not just a glitch, but a major error that doesn't allow you the procedures upon which to grieve or to rebut these assertions, claims, ultimately affecting then again the bottom line. And further, similar with Kip, your argument is that even with the change, there has not been, as painted by some of the other, not today, but in other hearings, there's been such a storm of conflagration of violations there have not been, certainly at Holiday or at Tesoro, at least from what we've heard. And so if we were to lighten up on that first violation, you think that there would still be a reduction in underage smoking, but you believe that it would be fair to you, the commercial side of this debate, ultimately. Is that somewhat?
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Anderson, that is exactly our goal here. We just want to have an acknowledgement that a 20-day suspension is so severe on our business that it really is bad public policy and bad business to inflict that kind of pain on a retailer that made an honest mistake, because we're not going to be perfect. And we do want the ability to present evidence at the hearing rather than simply having an unrelated proceeding and conviction introduced as evidence of our guilt when we were not a party to that proceeding, nor were we in privity with the employee.
Just if you could do this really, quickly. 20-day suspension. Was that against all your stores, or just the one store where the violation occurred? And what did it cost you in terms of sales for those 20 days? Do you think?
Madam Chair, Representative Guerra, we have three citations under appeal. We have not served a suspension. Where I'm taking our figures are, with the loss of the gasoline, the tobacco, obviously, and inside sales, we estimate a reduction in traffic of approximately 25%. People who use tobacco are very frequent visitors of our convenience stores, and so the actual traffic is probably in excess of 25%. We just took that as a figure from one of our locations, and that 25% drop in revenue would result in over $100,000 loss of revenue.
Would only apply to the one location where it occurred?
Madam Chair, Representative Gary, that is correct.
But it's never happened to you, so you don't know how much you lost?
That is true, because we're under appeal currently.
Okay. Representative Cott?
I.
Representative Cott, since he hasn't spoken, and then Gruenberg in final wrap-up.
Can you comment on the sanctions that are imposed selling tobacco to minors versus alcohol?
Madam Chair, Representative Cott, that is an excellent point, because under the current state law for proceeding against an endorsement holder for alcohol, the state has to prove that the endorsement holder knowingly or with criminal negligence allowed this activity to occur, which is obviously a far higher standard than what the tobacco endorsement penalties provide. In fact, there's absolutely no showing that the state needs to show that the retailer was negligent. There's simply the introduction of the conviction of the sales associate as evidence of our guilt. So they're widely disparate between the two. We think a more equitable solution would be to adopt HB 276, which goes nowhere near adopting a criminal negligence standard or a reckless standard. We're just trying to be able to show that we behave properly and we're not negligent.
Yes, Mr. Rush. I have read briefly this Spinard Action Committee case, and it clearly holds that the criminal conviction of a non-party following trial is not admissible as evidence in a subsequent civil proceeding.
that would seem to indicate that you are not denied due process. And you're saying here that for some reason this law, subsection M, says something to the contrary. I do not see anything in subsection M that is contrary to the Spinard Action Committee case. Can you tell me where subsection M is contrary to Spinard Action Committee?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Representative Gruenberg, M, the last sentence where it states a hearing under this section is limited to the following questions.
Yeah.
The first one is, was the person holding the business license endorsement or an agent or employee, et cetera, convicted by a plea or judicial finding of violating AS 1176.100? That's referencing, Representative Garrett, the conviction of the employee, the criminal conviction, which the hearing officer then takes into the endorsement civil procedure in determining whether or not we will then be held vicariously liable.
That is a different question than the question that was presented in SAC. Spinard Action Committee was on proof of a different fact. You can introduce a certified copy of a judgment to show conviction. That, or you can ask the person, were you convicted? This is an evidentiary question. What you're talking about here is a question of the element for suspension of the license. It's different. It's not an evidentiary question.
Madam Chair, Representative Gruenberg, you're correct that this case doesn't address this specific question. It's the most analogous case that I've been able to locate in Alaska jurisprudence. But in the context of a hearing, and I've attended them, all that happens is the state of Alaska shows the hearing officer the criminal conviction of the sales associate. It is a proceeding to which we are not a party, nor are we given notice. That conviction in and of itself is sufficient for the adjudicator to determine that we as a license endorsement holder are guilty of violating our endorsement, and therefore the resulting penalties will be placed on us.
Madam Chair, that's a different issue that wasn't addressed in SAC, Spinard Action Committee. That's a question of whether collateral estoppel can be applied in that case. And unless, I mean, and then that's a question that would be based upon the evidence in the case. But that's not the Spinard Action Committee case.
No, this could be oral arguments.
They do talk about the fact in this that if a judgment of guilty in a criminal case which follows proof beyond a reasonable doubt is to have impact, the impact should be by way of collateral estoppel, not by admitting the previous judgment. That's citing the rule of evidence, federal rule of evidence.
Steve, start addressing them as Your Honor. You'll get
We've
far.
We've got more. Enough on the record on that. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, Tammy Green.
Thank you. Steve is like, boy, was that a gauntlet.
Tammy Green, do you have questions do you have comments, or were you just there to answer questions?
This is Tammy Green. I'm the Section Chief for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion with the Division of Public Health. And I just wanted to make a few statements. Several of them have already been noted before. But in terms of the perspective from public health, we think that this is an important law that's been working, and we'd like to see things continue as they have been. I just wanted to note a couple of statistics that have been alluded to, but I'm not sure have been really fleshed out. Nearly all smoking starts in childhood. And of the current Alaska smokers, 78% started before the age of 15. 47% had already started by age 12. And it's relatively easy to keep kids from starting to use tobacco when you compare that to helping adults or assisting them to quit smoking or using tobacco. And I think the other statistic that was cited that we think is very important in terms of looking at a comprehensive approach to our tobacco program is that after the implementation of the 2002 enforcement law, the self-purchase of cigarettes by Alaska youth dropped from 29% to 13%, and that's really important. As well as we've seen a drop in youth smoking from the 1995 YRBS from 36% prevalence rate to 19% in 2003. So So from a public health perspective, we believe the law is working and that it's a part of our larger comprehensive tobacco prevention and control program, and we'd like to see the success continue and not to be changed.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Roger Hames in Sitka.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Cott, and committee members. My name is Roger Hames. I'm president of Hames Corporation and Triple C Ventures here in Sitka. We own two retail grocery stores and two convenience stores here. I'm a third-generation family-owned business. I've been in a retail environment in Sitka here for over 56 years. First off, I want to make extremely clear that we support the laws prohibiting the sale of tobacco products to minors. In addition, we take this issue very seriously with an aggressive education program in all of our stores for our associates. And becoming aware of the issue and the laws surrounding the sale of tobacco products to minors and the penalties involved to both the person caught selling illegally and the business itself. We try very hard to be a responsible business, doing the right things, following the laws, educating ourselves and our associates, and re-educating constantly, thus emphasizing the importance of this issue. When current state law was put into effect, there was obviously one party, I guess that'd be me, that was asleep at the switch. Current law is bad law as it relates particularly to retailers and the license suspension progression. Also, the current law is not about a tobacco issue, it's not about education, and certainly there is no incentive for retailers, no matter how hard we try and educate, since we lose our license with the first violation. I know we've lived through two suspensions at the same store location once, and one is pending. There never was any negotiation on those suspensions. It is about bringing a business in an instant to its knees and suffering overall tremendously, especially when tobacco products account for up to 20% of your business sales, which is the case in two of my convenience stores. What is extremely wrong with this picture is my business is totally at the mercy of one associate who made the wrong decision for whatever reason, but I can assure you that it is that it wasn't for a lack of an effort on the owner's part. It just isn't fair and quite opposite of a business-friendly law. It is the most dangerous and damaging law in the state from my perspective. However, 276, House Bill 276, is certainly a powerful yet still, I feel, very effective alternative to what we currently have in place. The financial penalties are quite stiff, yet if passed into law, they are livable without jeopardizing my overall business, which is currently taking place. Therefore, I'd encourage you to push forward and pass HB 276.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hames. Questions? Okay. Representative Guerra.
Mr. Hames, just very quickly, only if you know the answer, in your two-week suspension, can you tell us how much you lost in terms of, not gross revenue, because if a pack of cigarettes costs you a dollar and you lose a dollar, you didn't lose anything, but in terms of profit, can you tell us how much you lost in those 2 weeks? If you can't, it's okay. I'm just trying to get a sense.
Well, sure, and thank you. I appreciate that. Through the chair, the one location that was suspended the second time, the first time it was 20 days, the second time it was, what, the 45 days, I believe it was, it was in our bigger grocery store here in Sitka. I knew you were going to ask that question. I've been thinking back because it was a couple of years ago. The first time it affected business, and like Mr. Elleding stated, it changes business patterns and shopping habits. It did that for those 20 days, and for the 45 days, it really changed it. So lost sales was significant. I just am not prepared to give you any kind of number on that. It took a while before that turned around, before we could at least come out even, let alone go back to an increase in building our business.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next I'm going to go to Anchorage, Marge Larson.
Good afternoon. My name is Marge Larson. I'm the CEO for American Lung Association of Alaska, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak, even at 329 here. The work draft of HB 276 will effectively prevent the state from imposing meaningful sanctions on those businesses that make illegal tobacco sales to children. With the ability to sell a deadly addictive drug necessarily comes the responsibility to ensure that tobacco products are not sold to children. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but a relevant point, as I understand the current law, and I see no change with HB 276, is that first violation has to occur within a 24-month period. Otherwise, the clock starts again, and it's my understanding that very few citations, very few endorsement holders receive more than one citation on a license for a given location. So essentially, this bill would completely revoke suspensions from the current law. Now, when Mr. Steve Rush of Holiday graciously flew to Alaska to meet with us, he made two specific points. One was that they wanted to be able to separate Holiday and other responsible retailers from those who did not believe in enforcing the law or underage sales of tobacco. And the second being that the current law is more stringent than it needs to be to achieve SINAR compliance. Our argument is simply that may be true, that in fact I would agree that is true, that our current law is more stringent than it needs to be to achieve SINAR compliance. However, SINAR compliance is not enough to achieve the outcome of reduced tobacco use among children. And our current law and the rate of compliance that we have currently have made a difference in youth prevalence rates. Between 1997 and 2003, we reduced tobacco use prevalence among youth by 50%. No, it can't be entirely attributed to the enforcement program, because the enforcement program works in concert with tobacco counter-marketing media, with tobacco taxes, as others have mentioned, and with prevention efforts. But it is not worth the risk of removing one of the legs of that stool when our children's health are at risk. Now, this may not be a business-friendly law that is current, but it is a children's health law.
Okay, thank you very much. It's 3:30. My apologies to the folks we did not get to the extent that you would like to fax in your testimony. I promise you it will become a part of the committee record. The fax number is 465-6592, 465-6592. If you'd like to come back and testify, I think we'll take it up Monday, but why don't you just call my office, 465-2995, and my committee aide, Shalon, will let you know. She's working on the committee schedule. So there were some individuals we didn't get to. My apologies. And with that, we are adjourned for today.